Guess who's coming to town? It's me. I will be speaking at the National Restaurant Association Trade Show this month in Chicago. In addition to the keynote, I'll be offering complimentary one-on-one coaching sessions at the Yelp for Restaurants booth the day of the presentation. Be sure to stop by booth number 6064 to say hello and sign up for a strategy session. And if you can't make it, check out the Yelp for Restaurants website for a ton of free tools and templates to help you level up your restaurant today. Visit restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to learn more. Now here we go.
If you can spend the time figuring out how to tell an amazing story, you can partner with amazing digital marketers and folks who know loyalty, and you can unlock success with that messaging being the platform to jump off of.
Welcome to Full Comp, a show offering insight into the hospitality industry, featuring restaurateurs, thought leaders, and innovators. Served up on the house. Are you on track to hit your profitability goals for this year? If you're struggling to hit your numbers, I might be able to help. Here's how I do it. Every year, I offer 5 complimentary growth sessions to restaurant owners looking to scale. In this call, we'll examine your current situation to see what is and isn't working. We'll identify your growth possibilities by the close of the year. We'll uncover the number one thing holding you and your business back. And we'll develop a growth plan that will get your business results. Go to planwithjosh.com to schedule one of the 5 complimentary growth sessions. They're going to go quickly. They always do. In my humble opinion, the world has enough restaurants. What the world lacks are new ideas, and sometimes those ideas manifest themselves in the form of a new restaurant concept. Today we sit down with Justin Egan of Wing It On to discuss the big ideas behind the Blockbuster brand. Justin walks us through the step-by-step strategy they've used to scale up regardless of market conditions by focusing on storytelling and precise targeting.
I'm a born creative, like my God-given talents, right? I've always been like talented art, and I didn't know necessarily that I was going to become an artist really per se. I always kind of had a interest in business and money, and I was the type of kid that, you know, had a job when he was like 15 and a half because I wanted to just start working and start getting a paycheck, that kind of thing. So I never really pursued my talents, but they were always part of me, and I always thought marketing would have been like the perfect marriage of my skills and my passions. So that's what I always wanted to do. I just knew it from early on, like even before I could remember. So my path led me to, you know, I'm from the Northeast. It's a big financial services area with Boston and New York and Hartford being kind of wedged right between the two. So out of college, you know, I got a job at a big insurance company, and I just kind of worked my way up, climbed my way up, tried different jobs, ended up in marketing, did branding for some of the bigger insurance companies around. But I always had this entrepreneurial vein running through me that wanted me to explore my own path. So I had that opportunity with a friend of mine to open up like our own creative web agency. And that's where I started doing web design, graphic design, logos for small businesses in the area. And one of our first customers was Matt Incero. His first business that he owned with his father was a school supplies business. And they hired us to do their website and they hired us to do their logo. Fast forward, he's moving on to the next thing, right? He's going to start opening up his wing shop. And rather than calling it Waterbury Wings and things, he hired me back to come up with the name, to figure out the logo, the branding, the messaging, just menu items, that kind of thing. And that's where I just really dove in and started helping from a real like grassroots level to just kind of give birth to Wing It On. That's the genesis story.
Which is beautiful because it all worked out, but you could also look at it through another lens, which is, okay, two guys who don't know shit about the restaurant industry that come from outside of the industry get together to open a restaurant. I think we've heard that story a million times, right? And typically it ends in like the dumpster fire of a business.
So, file that in the trash bin. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Something you don't want to talk about at the next family party. I hear you.
Indeed, right? Uncle Larry, I am so sorry I borrowed that $50,000. I will get it back to you at some point. I promise. this is an industry defined by a low barrier to entry, which is
correct.
Beautiful and great in the way that there are opportunities like Wing It On that come out and scale massively, but more often than not, they don't. So when you look back on those early days and you look back on the key decisions that the two of you made, what were the right decisions that you think led to early success?
So the right decisions from the get-go was, number one, creating a name for it that was really scalable. I think that was key. And I tell the story a lot, but when Matt was pitching me his idea, we were sitting in this coffee shop and he's telling me all these amazing ways that Wing It On's, that his business plan is going to make us a bunch of money. And I was seemingly zoning out. I was on GoDaddy.com, literally just like randomly just typing in like wing puns in the domain search, right? And all of a sudden Wing It On popped up. He's like, did you hear anything I just said? And I'm like, hold on. You know, I'm like, here it is. Wing It On.com. Just was like this beautiful moment. We were just like jumping up and down, like, yes, lock it down. That's just going to be the name of our place. So I think that was an initial key, was like finding something scalable in the name and the brand. It had to pass certain sniff tests. So we try to infuse like a more polished look to it rather than a mom and pop shop look to it from the get-go. The other thing that was big was the passion around the product. People from all around Waterbury, Connecticut knew where to get the best wings because we focused on the best wings. We produced that buffalo quality wing every single time. So I think that people are just always going to be into the experience and they're going to go where they know they're going to get a consistently delicious, amazing product. So that was the second big platform, if you will, that we kind of were able to spring off of.
Here's a nightmare with wings specifically is for anyone that's ever owned a bar, ever sold wings, variable costing on wings is a nightmare. A flapper could cost you $1 today and $3 a unit tomorrow. How do you reconcile that? How were you able to standardize pricing over the years? Wing prices have been all over the place.
Yeah, that is amazingly challenging. Yeah, we call it the chickenomics factor. Like, how in the heck are we going to figure this out? Luckily, you know, my partner, Matt Ancero, is just, when it comes to numbers, he's just the guy that you want to have running that end of the business. So from a supply chain, just figuring out what the prices are going to be, being able to adapt quickly. If we had to do price changes, we just across the board had to make sure like we were communicating to everybody in advance to let them know what we needed to do. Sometimes we needed to shift to promoting other items on the menu that were lowering in cost. Like there was a moment in time where the chicken wing skyrocketed, but the tender plummeted. So we immediately just started promoting the boneless tenders. And really, the only thing that really helps is keeping your pulse on it and being able to adapt. So if we're small, you have the ability to do that, but also scale. One thing we didn't have is scale. So we always were kind of having to keep that scrappy mentality of figuring this out as we go because we didn't have 500 units that we could leverage in these amazing chicken contracts that some of the other bigger brands were probably getting to take advantage of. So really it's just about being scrappy and just figuring it out and knowing that when you're in this business, you're going to get beat up along the way. There's so many things that are going to give you a reason to want to quit or stop or do something else, but you just can never stop. You just have to keep on going and figuring it out. And we had a good bunch of operators at the time that were in it with us. So we were able to, on the fly, figure out, you know, if we had to adjust pricing. And luckily we had amazing tech stack partners that could help us easily across the board adjust our pricing. We could implement pricing right within the stores themselves because we had digital menu boards. So we made it easy for everybody to be able to adjust. But it's no shortage of challenges, put it that way.
Speaking of, what are some of the mistakes you guys made in the early days and the lessons you learned from those?
I don't even think you'd have enough time for all the mistakes we've made, Josh. Oh, gosh. I mean, there was a time where we pivoted to other products. For example, the original Wing It On actually sold burgers and salads and wraps. And I think that when we decided that we wanted to franchise, And we got a ton of insight from folks that had been doing it for a while. And they were like, you guys got to cut this menu down. Like, if you want to scale, you have got to get rid of the burgers, keep it to one protein. And we weren't really open to that right away. So I think that hurt us. I think if we cut our menu faster and quicker, we might have seen maybe a different result. The other thing that I think that was a lesson learned was, franchising was a great way for us to grow. But I think in hindsight, maybe we wouldn't have gotten into that right away. We probably could have opened up a couple more corporate stores and really fine-tuned things a little bit, set the operations a little bit, got a little bit more experience under our belt, and then move on to franchising. I think that, who knows what would happen, right? I mean, we wouldn't have changed a thing. Like, I'm so happy where we are and the path that we were on. I wouldn't go back and adjust anything. But those are the things you think about. Like, what if we didn't rush into certain things or took our time with certain things? How would that have played out?
Well, franchising foundationally changes not only the company, but like your role within the company, because now you're not managing employees, you're managing franchisees, you're managing other entrepreneurs, which is like herding cats.
And so you're basically splitting yourself into two people now. Like, you have to understand you're basically running two different businesses at the same time.
100%. Yeah. And so if that's the case, my question would be, what skills, we know what skills you think you're best in the world at, right? Like, your skills are around creativity, marketing, branding, wordsmithing, but now you have to develop an entirely new skill set as your role evolves in the company.
100%.
So what new skills did you acquire, and like, how did you go about acquiring them? How do you learn, Justin?
How does Justin learn? Justin's a fast learner. I think that just the best way for me to learn is to just get in there and, to our earlier point, just make some mistakes, but graciously make mistakes and just kind of go into it knowing that, hey, I don't know the answers to this. I know I can give it a shot. And I know that our franchisees are not shy people. They will give you the feedback that you need to get to learn and adapt and grow. So the skill set I think that was most important was, the skill set of influencing, how to talk to folks, how to position different ideas, how to make sure that you're communicating the right way, where this isn't a unilateral thing. A lot of times franchisors will kind of make these edicts and franchisees have to follow, but we didn't want to have that type of a relationship with our franchisees. We wanted to keep it open dialogue, even though we were young and scrappy, even though we didn't have local marketing co-ops to kind of band together and give us feedback, we still wanted feedback. So to me, going from like, hey, I can be creative and I can create things and I can work with visionaries to kind of make their visions come to reality through messaging and branding and all that, to, oh, now we have to like influence a lot of people who are very vital to our growth to try new things, do new things, sign up with new vendors, take new approaches, open up whole projects to kind of swap out POS systems, you name it. We had to communicate that and influence and gain buy-in. And I think that was one of my biggest, and I'd venture to say, one of my most valuable lessons. And I'll take that with me wherever I go.
As a consultant, one of the things that I have is I have this group coaching program, and I bring in all of these experts in to talk with the folks. And recently we had Ari Weinzweig on from Zingerman's Deli, which is like, I think at this point, between like an $80 and $100 million national empire. And one of the things that he was saying was, somebody was talking about, I need to get organized and I need to get focused. That way, I can exhibit, I can control the outcomes. And he goes, are you kidding me? Like, control is a myth. Like, everything is in crisis. Everything is in chaos all of the time. It is the nature of this business. He goes, you can hope to do is influence. That you can work to influence outcomes in the way that you think they should go. And as it relates to that, as we talk about influencing outcomes, I want to talk about your ethos as a marketer. Because that's really what you're selling when you sell a franchise, right? Like, you will choose this franchise, not because it is a higher quality product, but because the likelihood of success in going with this particular franchise is higher than the perceived success of other franchises. Because for most franchisees, execution isn't an issue because they're not the one executing on the ground on a day-to-day basis. So it's marketing. So what is your marketing ethos? What is the marketing philosophy around Wing It On? Why do people choose to sign up for one of your locations?
I've gone back and forth on this, to be very candid about all that. I want to say it's because the product's in a super hot trending genre, right? Chicken is super hot. Wings are super hot. There's only one really number one quick serve wing competitor that everybody knows the name of. And there's really no number two. So one of the things that excites us is that we can become the number two. We have everything that it takes. The product is far superior. We have the same tech stacks. We have the same brand excitement around us. We just need more great operators to buy into that. The more I think about it, I think back and I'm just like, maybe it's just us, you know, the people that are involved too, that are kind of the X factors in this, you know. Other brands don't have a Matt and Sarah or a Justin Egan or even a Greg Majewski now with Craverly Brands to really help catapult and bring this brand to the next level. That is something that's special. That's why when it comes to, you know, the marketing ethos and what you do in your message, like the more authentic messaging can come from my partner, Matt, and myself and Greg, like as like the folks that are responsible ultimately for this brand, the better. I think that we have an opportunity to really tell our story out there in a really authentic way. And I think it's about time more people heard it, to be honest.
And so how do you get that message out there? At the end of the day, it's a competitive marketplace, whether you're trying to acquire franchisees or whether you're trying to acquire customers for an individual location. How do you tell a story in a way that resonates with people?
From a franchise development perspective, the way to tell that message is, you know, you have to kind of, and this might actually go for both markets, you have to make the commitment to just be out there, be in the market. There's no silver bullet. It's a mixture of everything. Like you have to be at all the franchise conventions, talking to the folks that are just the tire kickers, even. Like that does not sound appealing, but it's something that you just have to do. You have to experiment with paid social advertising and figure out what the right message is that really resonates with the right audience. You know, you have to commit to being really diligent with your social media messaging and your videos and just getting out there and consistently saying that same message over and over again. And even take a step back, finding the message that works. And then when you find it, don't be afraid to keep hounding it. Even if it sounds like you're a broken record to yourself, that doesn't matter because chances are nobody's heard that message yet. Even though you think you've must have like said it ad nauseum, you just got to keep pushing with it. So I think from a new business and development perspective, it's just being out there, being visible, trying every tactic that you can to see what works and what doesn't. And from a restaurant local marketing perspective, it's empowering your franchisees to be that beacon in their community for it. You know, that starts with them being true believers in your brand from day one. And that is really important part of onboarding. Onboard folks, get them super excited, give them the tools they need, give them the local marketing support that they need, give them all the toolkits, all the playbooks that they need to be able to be effective and do the Little League sponsorships and do the tastings and do the fundraisers and get out in their community. Plus layer on top of that, right? The loyalty program, email programs, and targeted direct mail, connected TV ads, display ads, like you name anything to get that visibility up and get people to give it a shot, get their first try at that restaurant. The rest should take care of itself, right? If you're producing that quality food and you're giving that amazing hospitality and continue that local marketing influence impact, you will see steady sales at your restaurants. So not easy, but it's also not hard. It's just a commitment to knowing that that work is vital for the long-term success, that everyday hustle, that everyday tactic, the stuff that takes effort to do makes the difference.
And isn't that the pain in the ass? I mean,
isn't it?
I say it all the time. It's the foundational stuff. It's the fundamentals that you just restate over and over and over again. There are really only three keys, right? So the first is product market fit. Do you have it? And are you able to make money off the customers you currently have? Then step two is if you have product market fit, if there is existing unmet demand for your product, then it's just about awareness. Hey, you want this thing? We have this thing. And then once you've achieved massive awareness, then it's just about frequency. And all of those things, I think, kind of fall under the banner of focus. So from a marketer's perspective as you're guiding these franchisees that are undoubtedly no different than any other entrepreneur on the planet in the way that they see a trend on TikTok and they want to jump on that shit too. How do you manage the expectations of the franchisees and align them all around this focused effort on, again, the fundamentals, the Little League games and the charity auctions and all of these things?
The bottom line is us acting as the stewards for the brand and us acting as the folks that are also operators along with them. We know from experience what works and what doesn't. You know, I think that's a valuable feature, if you will, about Wing It On and all the brands within Creatively Brands. Like, we're not just a franchisor telling a franchisee what to do from an office. We're actually operators ourselves. We have the tried and true experience, know what works and what doesn't. So that helps when, again, you're trying to influence. And I think that social validation kind of gives people like a little bit of a less apprehensive feeling about what we're asking them to do. You know, we can demonstrate that we've done it and we can give them the tools to do it. It's like the only thing left to do is just to do the thing. There's plenty of metrics. There's plenty of return on investment facts and figures that we could throw at you. But really, until you do this, until you try it, until you see for yourself, you won't necessarily be a true believer. But if you follow our plan, our playbook, you'll see that it is what will ultimately give you the most wind in your sails for the longest period of time. And what more could we ask? Just to partner with somebody who's open-minded and understands, like, okay, I mean, that's the reason why I franchise, right? To not have to figure all this out on my own and bang my head up against the wall and tell Uncle Larry that I own 50K at the next family party.
Let's talk about that playbook. So you enter an existing market. I think it's much easier because there's some brand awareness, there's some familiarity, but these days you're opening in brand new markets where no one's ever heard of you, where no one knows you exist. Maybe there's an incumbent, maybe there isn't. What does that playbook look like to create awareness, breed demand, tell your story, step by step? What does that look like? And we can start from before the restaurant opens.
Yeah, I mean, before the restaurant opens, it's all about training and getting everybody really like to become brand ambassadors. You know, knowing inside and out what we do, what we stand for, what our flavor profiles are, why we are different. That's huge. Like, everybody has to be able to, by heart, talk about all those amazing things about Wing It On. The second thing is just letting them know, like, okay, the training that's going to happen for your staff, the training that's going to happen for your management, and how to execute the Wing It On way, right? Like, we don't drop the ball when it comes to wings, especially not on game day. Like, we know what wing nuts want, and it's perfection, and that's what we aim to do. Other than that, it's really like the promotion of it, right? So having local PR get involved to get the awareness out, leverage partnerships that we have with other vendors to do like direct mail, really to kind of generate trial is really what we're all about. But we don't even really start that until after you've been open for a good 4 weeks. Like, you have to get the kinks out of your restaurant. So really it's just about soft open, work with the staff, train them well, get them humming along. Then you go a little bit wider. You go like to the 4 block, right, where you're probably going to be handing out a lot of coupons, a lot of door hangers, just getting people excited about it. Again, all about trial, but you're not going wider yet. You're still kind of targeted your grid, your 4 block grid. Then you're going to see like this kind of slow uptick in your tickets, ticket counts. And then once you're ready to turn on the marketing rocket boosters, then you're going to go loud with paid social, you're going to go loud with direct mail, you're going to go loud with connected TV, and you're going to really get a lot of interest, a lot of trial. It's going to be a lot of digital, it's going to be a lot of in-store, and that is the catalyst, right, to get that sustained traffic, right, for your first year. And we don't tell folks, you know, you're going to be instantly profitable at year one. I mean, we like to shoot for like after a year, like give it a year, because you're going to be doing a lot of promoting, you're going to be doing a lot of sampling, you're going to be doing a lot of things that are going to cost money, but that's marketing that's being reinvested into your brand, your business. But that's how we do it. We call it the 4-wall, 4-block, 4-mile approach.
I love that. You've mentioned your co-founder a couple of times and you've mentioned him fondly. Talk to me about what keeps the romance alive after so many years, especially considering all of the evolutions of the concept from a single unit to what is ultimately going to be a national franchise and a powerhouse in the market.
Yeah, Matt and Sarah and I have our similarities, and it's not just because we're both bald with beards. We're similar because, you know, we both came from the same part of the world, Waterbury, Connecticut. So we have that kind of in common. Our families are similar. So we get each other. I think that I'm a little older than him, so we're not in like the same necessary generation. So I'm always fascinated by the work ethic that he had from a very early on. Just somebody that just completely relentless. And I learned so much from him in that regard. I think that he's extremely analytical, and I think that I'm extremely creative, and I think that we had an amazing blend and had that ability to kind of balance each other out. So for those reasons, things never got contentious. Things never got where we couldn't stand each other. Like, we were like in synergy. And I think that's an amazing opportunity, amazing experience to have in a business partner.
Were there ground rules? Are there ground rules for the partnership, for communication, for whether spoken or unspoken?
I think that we always knew that, and, you know, this is something he, you know, had to remind me of a lot. I mean, the business needs what the business needs. Like, he's always been just like diligent and resilient in getting things done anytime, whenever. I always adapted to that as much as I could. Of the two of us, I had a family, he didn't at the time. So, you know, I always had a ton of priorities that I was always kind of balancing, but still, I always took that feedback to heart and made sure like I was keeping on things and just working at the same pace that he was and needed me to be. Of course, there were hiccups at times, but we always worked through them. I think that, yeah, I always say like he was the type that was extremely strategic, and I always appreciated his ability to kind of play three-dimensional chess and know 10 moves ahead. I was always in awe. Like, he would literally be coming to conclusions, and he would literally have to wait for the entire rest of the team to mentally connect the dots to get to the same conclusion that he already did. And he always was gracious and had the patience to kind of let us all have to do that and be cool with it also. I just thought that it was just a great place to be, always keep learning and still have that ability to kind of thrive professionally with a great partner.
If I was ever to get too full of myself, if I was ever to think that I knew everything there was to know about this industry, I would only need to hop on the phone with Greg Majewski to realize that I don't know shit about shit and that there is a very long way to go. So in your lovely marriage with your co-founder, at some point you decided to have an open relationship. You decided to bring Greg Majewski and Craveworthy Brands into the bed with you. Talk to me about that decision, because I'm sure that you didn't come to it lightly.
No, I mean, it was a point in our business where we were thriving and we made it through COVID wonderfully. Like, our sales were insane. We had all the tech partners and capabilities to not just weather the storm, but for us to thrive in. And I think that was amazing. I think that it got to a point where when we were talking about franchising and realized that, you know, if we really wanted to step this up to the next level, like, we needed a partner, and that was either going to be an investment partner that was going to give us the resources and capital to grow. But again, we'd have to do that ourselves, or partner with Greg Majewski at Craveworthy Brands, who would help fund our growth, but also wrap his arm around us and help us see around corners. Now, which one sounds better to you? Because to us, it was an easy decision, but it was something that we knew could open up a ton more doors for us than if we decided to go it ourselves. That's how we came to that decision. It's grow methodically. That's how we had been doing. If we had this opportunity to really crank things up with folks who have done this before, let's go along for the ride.
What I would want to know is, right off the bat, you guys get together, what were some early aha moments that Greg was able to provide?
Right away, we saw that what we had built was pretty darn good, but there were some critical things that we just had to address. And the first of which being the elephant in the room, which is the logo, the imagery, the branding, right? So we built this brand not necessarily having experience working in creative agencies, right? We did the best we could. We thought we had, you know, amazing photography and great branding, but sometimes you have to kind of take the feedback and say, hey, you know, maybe that brand, the way it is, could be holding us back a little bit. Who knows? Like, what if somebody's looking at that brand and saying, it's good. It's just not multi-unit level yet. So we had to go through the exercise to say, okay, well, if we want to do this, what do we got to do? We can't let the things that were holding us back continue to do so. So right away was branding updates. The other thing that was big was menu tweaks. We have amazing wings and we promoted our wings. We talked about our wings all day. We also had like 7 different chicken sandwiches. We also had chicken dumplings that we were doing because, again, we talk about the price of chicken having to innovate on your menu. We introduced a dumpling, which you could coat in a wing sauce and serve up like wings. We also had combos, but we never really marketed our combos. They were always like modifiers on the original item, right? So these are things that are like tweaks, but critical tweaks. They're small, but they make a big impact. So I think that whole repackaging of the menu, repackaging of the logo, and just really kickstarting our franchise development were the 3 huge things that right off the bat we saw an impact on.
What about growth? How has your philosophy on growth evolved over the years?
I think that growth from our perspective has been grow slowly and methodically. And I think that was right for 2 guys, again, that didn't have much money and needed to make sure we were making the right moves. I think what's changed is once you're within a platform company, you see like you can actually grow faster because you have a lot more resources on the executive level to help unlock things like supply chain problems and unlock branding and local store marketing and training and all the things that you're wearing all these different hats doing that really that is ultimately slowing you down if you have to wear a million different hats. So with somebody on the leadership team that whose job it is to focus only on that for the Craveworthy brands helps speed things up. And that's eye-opening for us. So we're excited to grow. We're excited to grow faster. We see now that there's nothing really holding us back at all at this point with the tweaks that we've made with Craveworthy brands, and the rocket ship is ready to take off.
What should we steal from you? What tactics, tools, strategies have you adopted and internalized that have served you well that we should use as well?
I'm not really a big digital marketing guru. I'm more of a branding and messaging guy. And what I've found is if you can spend the time figuring out how to tell an amazing story, you can partner with amazing digital marketers and amazing email marketers and folks who know loyalty, and you can unlock success with that messaging being the platform to jump off of. A lot of times the tactics are made while the message is being made on the fly, and that doesn't always work because you could have mixed messaging depending on who you're working with. So if you want to call it a tactic, you can. I think it's the most strategic tactic is get your messaging right, get your story right, and make sure that it's hitting the emotional hot buttons that your audience wants to hear. Make sure it's relevant, because if it's not, you're going to arguably be wasting a lot of money with tactics that aren't necessarily going to work.
The restaurant industry is filled with unspoken rules and traditions about how things should be done. How would you like to see our industry turn the tables to create a better future for all of us?
One of the things that I've seen in just the franchising space is we talked about folks that are, you know, maybe new to franchising and not quite sure. It starts with this. Do I want to do a food franchise or do I want to do a service franchise? Right. And for some reason, it's like if you are not into food at all, like it's hard to change those people's minds. And I think that that's a problem. I wish that more people knew that it could be rewarding because it's fun and the food and the product and the people and the experiences that you're actually giving folks is intrinsically worth the effort that it takes to run a restaurant. The other thing too is, I mean, what about just good old fashioned hospitality? Like if you are into making people feel good, then food is for you because people need to eat much more than they're going to need to file their taxes, right? So if you're interested in a tax franchise versus a food franchise, well, which one do you want to like really make an impact to people's lives on a daily basis? So I think that that stigma is something that I would like to change. You know, being open to the hospitality industry does not mean having to deal with small margins. It means having to deal with big emotions and big impact to folks' lives, whether it's your staff, whether it's your employees, or whether it's you as an owner operator.
Our industry suffers from razor-thin margins, and the only way for us to ensure profitability is to make data-driven decisions. The numbers don't lie, and Yelp for Restaurants just released some incredibly compelling numbers. For starters, Yelp reaches 9 times more customers online than OpenTable. And when restaurants pair that level of visibility with Guest Manager and Yelp ads, they experience up to an 8% lift in diner bookings. Think about what that 8% lift could do for your restaurant's finances. To learn more about how Yelp for Restaurants can support your business, visit restaurants.yelp.com/full comp to learn more today. That's Justin Egan. For more information on Justin and Wing It On, visit wingiton.com. If you want to tell us your story, hear previous episodes, or check out our other content, go to restaurants.yelp.com/full comp. Thank you so much for listening to the show. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. While you're there, please leave us a review. A special thanks to Yelp for helping us spread the word to the whole hospitality community. I'm Josh Copel. You've been listening to Full Comp.